Matthew chapter 5. And seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain, and when he was seated, his disciples came to him. So Jesus went up on a mountain, and those that were following him went up with him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." We often call these the Beatitudes. And I think that's a good term, because these are the attitudes that Jesus is looking for to become Christians, to become members of his church, his body, and to go to heaven. "Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake." And we have seen that throughout history, that Christians are always persecuted. And the level of persecution is different in different periods of time. You know, in the first century, it was terrible. I mean, Christians were just absolutely and brutally tortured and murdered. Today in America, our persecution mostly just consists of people making fun of us, thinking we're weird, thinking we're stupid to believe in a God, things like that. But if you're a Christian, you are going to suffer persecution. As far as what level of persecution, it'll be different. Different parts of the world, different time periods throughout history. "Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." So he's reminding them. Guess what? They did the same thing to the prophets in the Old Testament. They tortured them, they persecuted them, they killed them. But they'll have their reward. And this also shows that, hey, you know what? Christians are not promised a wonderful life. God doesn't put Christians in a safety bubble. We're going to suffer all the same things that other people do. But our reward will be in heaven. "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its savor, with what shall it be salted? It is therefore good for nothing to be cast out and to be trampled underfoot by men." Christians are representatives of Jesus. And we need to show the world that we are Christians. "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it gives light to all those that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven." Now, he's not saying go around and brag. "Hey, everybody, I'm a Christian. Look at me. Look at me. I'm just wonderful." No, not at all. But live your life in such a way that people can look at you and say, that person's different. There is something different about that person. They have a moral standard. And whether they hate that or not, they will respect it. And some with good hearts might even say, "Why is that person different? I want to learn more about Christianity." "Do not think that I have come to destroy the law of the prophets. I have not come to destroy, but to fulfill." So Jesus is saying, I'm not coming here to destroy the law of Moses and destroy the Old Testament and say, all that was bad and wrong. And I'm coming to fulfill every single prophecy that was in the Old Testament. And we will see later in Colossians that the law of Moses was nailed to the cross when Jesus was crucified. And it was done away with. So instead of living under the law of Moses, we now live under the law of Christ. And we will see that as we go along. He says, "For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no way pass from the law until all is fulfilled." I am going to be fulfilling every single prophecy in the Old Testament. And then he warns people, God's will be done. If you get in the way, that's going to be a problem. Therefore, whoever breaks one of these least commandments and teaches men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. God's will be done. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall in no circumstances enter into the kingdom of heaven. I bet you there were some scribes and Pharisees there listening to Jesus, and I'm sure they were highly offended. And in today's world, oh, that's just the worst thing ever, is to say anything to offend anybody. Jesus did not have any problem offending people. I do not have any problem offending someone with the truth, because if it somehow gets them to heaven, that's okay. They can be offended at me all they want. You have heard that it was said by those of old. So he's going to now go into some comparisons between traditions and his law. Now I say traditions because some of these are, yes, they are biblically accurate from the law of Moses, and some of them are not. More of tradition that, the scribes and Pharisees were telling people that was not necessarily accurate. So the first one he's going to compare between tradition and his law is murder. You have heard that it was said by those of old, you shall not kill, and whoever kills shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has anything against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. So he's talking about, not talking about literal murder. You know, we all know that committing murder is wrong. The law of Moses quite definitely said that murder is wrong. But also your attitude towards other people and how you treat them is also wrong. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge deliver you to the officer, and you be cast into prison. Truly I say unto you, you shall by no means come out of there until you have paid the last farthing. So Jesus, I think he's saying, try to get along with people as best as you can. Have a good attitude towards others. Even if you don't like them and maybe even want to kill them, treat them like you should treat them. You have heard that it was said by those of old. So he's starting in on a second comparison, which is adultery. You shall not commit adultery, but I say unto you that whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. Watch your thoughts. So in the first comparison, he's saying, you know, watch your actions. Behave appropriately. Now he's saying, watch your thoughts. If you're lusting after a woman, you're already committing adultery with her in your heart. Watch your thoughts. And if your right eye offends you, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. And if your right hand offends you, cut it off and cast it from you, for it is profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body should be cast into hell. Now, he actually does mean this literally. This is not this is a figure of speech. But here's the thing. Our eyes do not literally cause us to sin. Our hands do not literally cause us to sin. What causes us to sin? Our minds and our hearts. That's what causes us to sin. So we've got to watch our thoughts. Watch our thoughts. And you need to just get away from any kind of temptation. If there's a certain thing that really tempts you, stay away from it. Stay as far away from it as you can. Go without it. Because that is better than going to hell. Just stay away from it. So he's telling us to watch our actions and to watch our thoughts. Now the next comparison between tradition and his law is divorce. So in verse 31, it has been said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that whoever divorces his wife, except for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries, she who is divorced commits adultery. Jesus will go into this a little bit more in Matthew 19:9. But he's setting down laws for marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Again, you have heard that it has been said by those of old. So this is going to do a fourth comparison about oaths, making promises, swearing. You shall not renounce an oath, but perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say unto you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your communication be yes, yes, or no, no, for whatever is more than these comes from evil. So as Christians, your word should be good enough. Just yes and no. You don't need to be making oaths and swearing on this and swearing on that. Now, I know, sometimes in legal court situations, they might have you swear, and that's fine. That's just a legal thing. But in general, your word should be good enough because, as a Christian, don't be a liar. And don't go, well, I do lie a lot, but I swear on my mother's grave that this is true. Just don't do that. Your word should be good enough because you don't lie. He's going to make another comparison between tradition and his law, and it's about revenge. You have heard that it has been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you, do not resist evil. But whoever strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man sues you in court and takes away your coat, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go a mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and do not turn away from him who would borrow from you. Now, I do not think Jesus is saying, just let people stomp all over you and treat you like a mat and just step on you. That's not what he's saying. First of all, he says, if someone slaps you on the cheek, turn to him the other also. It's a slap. It's not a punch in the face. It's not assault. It's a slap. It's more of an insult. And, you know, if someone wants your jacket, and if they want you to walk with them 1 mile, these are minor things. These are just maybe personal insults to you. Just pick your battles. You know, it is more important to win over a soul than to be right. And that's what's really important. So if it's just a minor insult thing, let it go. Let it go. Who knows? They may see you and go, wow, this person is not a vengeful person. Why? What's different about them? And it may turn their interest to God, which would be great. Okay, last comparison that he's going to make is love. So in verse 43, you have heard that it has been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who despitefully use you and persecute you. Now, let's explain love here. Love, as Jesus describes it, and in most of the places in the New Testament that talk about love, it is not talking about emotions. It's not talking about oh, I just have to love, mushy-gushy love everybody around me and hug them and kiss them and la, la, la. No. No emotions have to be involved at all. You do not have to like that person at all to agape love them. But what you do have to do to love, agape love them, is to do what is best for them. Always do what's best for them. And I think, you know, for a long time, I think I misunderstood that. Because I was like, well, how am I supposed to love everyone? I can't. I can't stand that person's personality. That person over there is a real turkey. That person's annoying. I can't love all these people. I can't fake that emotion. I don't have to. It's agape love. Those people that I don't like, I don't have to like them. God never commands me to like them. But what I do have to do is do what's best for them. Because as a Christian, my goal is to get myself to heaven and try to take anybody else that I can. So keep that in mind when you hear commandments in the New Testament about love. It's 99% of the time talking about agape love. Okay, where was I? Verse 45, that you may be the children of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun to shine, to rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Don't even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brothers only, what do you do more than others? Don't even the tax collectors do so? Therefore, you be perfect, even as your Father who is in heaven is perfect. So, again, he's saying, treat other people as you want to be treated. Even rotten people treat their loved ones well, but go that extra step. For people you don't know, people you don't like, treat them just as well also. And if you do that, you will be pleasing to God. And that is Matthew chapter 5.